I have a confession. I may have killed someone. Some weeks ago, we had the chance to play at the beautiful Wasatch Mountain golf course. And as we approached the back nine, we saw a beautiful flock of wild turkeys. These are somewhat rare in Utah, and they were a cool sight to behold. Unfortunately, on that tee box, I pulled out my 3-wood and hit one of my signature super thin, super low hooks to the left. It was heading towards a tree, and as I kept my eye on it so that I wouldn't lose the ball, I saw an explosion of feathers and heard a sickening noise. Eric and I ran up to find our ball over by the tree, and sure enough, there was a giant pile of feathers, although there was no sign of the turkey to be seen. Eric, in classic fashion, expressed sympathy for the bird and berated me for my poor shot. All Cody had to say was, well, he shouldn't have been standing there. One of my favorite things about the game of golf is the opportunity to interact with nature. The scenery is beautiful, the wildlife is varied, and it's a privilege to be able to connect with the outdoors. So, shout out to the poor turkey that I creamed on the 10th hole. I'm sorry, buddy. But to be fair, you shouldn't have been standing there. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
All right, welcome to For the Record. Today we have a mulligan moment, a round recap that got a little interesting, a little heated. Talk nerdy to me and a what's in the bag, and then we are doing a birdie bev barrage. So let's start off with a mulligan moment. Over to you, Cody.
Yeah, so I just had a quick mulligan moment that I wanted to talk about. And on this podcast, we try and make it pretty timeless, so we don't spend a lot of time on current events just because we don't know when people will be listening to this and stuff. And
we don't want to sound dated.
Well, and content goes stale pretty quick, right?
Yeah, it does.
But I do want to bring up something from a conversation we had, I think, 2 or 3 episodes ago, where we were talking about Rory when he completed the career Grand Slam. And we were talking, and John Paul, you said nobody else is going to do that.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did.
You did.
I said Scottie Scheffler was going to do it.
No.
You said there's no way he's going to do it.
You did.
Oh, roll the tape.
I don't know if anyone's going to do it again.
I'll bet Scotty does it.
You
I have
think
a bold,
so?
Yeah, I think Scotty will do it. Now, in the case of all eventualities, I'm either going to say, I told you so, and this is correct, and I remember distinctly saying that, or I'm going to say, you were right, I was wrong, you were intelligent, I am stupid, you are very attractive, I am
You're not very good looking. Okay, Cody to interject here after we recorded this together. Just to say, okay, John Paul, I'm stupid, you're smart, I was wrong, you were right, you're the best, and I'm the worst, you were very good-looking, and I'm not very attractive.
After the Open, Scottie Scheffler is one major away from the career Grand Slam, and he just has to win the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
He just has that one thing.
Granted, it is probably the toughest competition of golf season.
I can imagine that now he can focus on that. Like, this is my one goal, to get that Grand Slam.
The problem is the guy just becomes even more and more likable. His comments this week were just like, you spent all this time focusing on golf to win, and then you do, and the elation is just kind of fleeting after a little bit. And Nike, did you see Nike's ad that they came out after he won at the Open?
No.
It was 2 slides. And the first one, it says, you've already won. And it's a picture with him and his son on the putting green.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next slide says, but another major never hurt.
Oh,
yeah,
that's good.
That's so good. I am full camp Scotty. And I got to tell you right now, 3 different guys in their press conferences on Saturday after the Saturday round used the same word to describe Scottie Scheffler. And it's a good word in the sports world. They called him inevitable. That is such a good compliment to get from your fellow golfers that you are inevitable.
Rory did an interview, and they asked him what he thought of him, and he's like, everyone else is catching up. He is the leader of the pack. He is the gold standard at this point.
Did you catch that? Eric had golf commentary from
Golf
Media. He had golf news.
He watched golf stuff on his own time.
I do.
That's a high five.
We're so proud of you.
Yeah.
Yay, we have turned a corner.
I watch a lot of Bob Does Sports.
And yeah, I just wanted to make sure you caught that because I specifically have a soundbite. I don't watch sports.
I don't watch sports.
For the record, people. No, I'm huge Camp Scotty. His press conference earlier this week was the stuff of legends, and his performance was even more legendary.
Let's jump into the round recap from a couple of weeks ago. So John Paul is recovering from surgery. And he had not gotten the clear from the doctor yet. Eric and I played, and I think the last episode we had recorded about how you had caddied for Eric, and then we got rained out.
On the rain round, yeah.
We decided to do kind of a recreation the following week where John Paul still caddied for Eric. It went quite differently.
It did not go well.
And if I haven't formally apologized, Eric, I do now. I might have come out the gate a little bit hot because in my head, John Paul and I have talked a little bit about this while you were on vacation, and we think that we might have upped the ante too far.
I'm going to put my hand in the air, and I'm going to say that this is my fault. Now, when we say that the round didn't go well, the scores could have been better, but that's not the problem. The problem is that round of golf was significantly less enjoyable than it should have been.
Mm.
It was awkward. There was a weird feeling in the air. And I spent days just ruminating over what the heck went wrong and where it went. Eric was super gracious about it because he had a very rough round. And he was just like, I was tired. I wasn't in it. And that was great. But I think that there was a contributing factor. And so we're going to explore that space for a moment right now. And here's what I think the problem is.
Okay.
I was super excited to caddy for you the first time. And I was super excited to caddy for you for the second time. But the first time, if you recall, on the first hole, you scored the most effortless par in the world. Do you remember what Cody did?
He double bogeyed?
He double bogeyed right out of the gate. And I actually think it might have been an eight. I think it was a triple on the par five?
It was a double or a triple.
It was a double or a triple. It was bad. And so something clicked in my head and I was like, Eric has it. Cody doesn't have it. One of Eric's goals is to beat Cody. Let's lean in. Let's do that today. Let's make that happen. And I maintain it was a really good shot at that. And I still wanted, Cody will deny this. We'll never know. But I'm going to tell you, I think you would have won that round if we'd been able to finish it. Here's the problem. That's not your only goal in golf. That's not it, right? And so I know you're not a hugely competitive person, but Cody is.
Mm.
And so when we showed up on the course that day, I don't think he recognizes this, but my going after him during the previous round shuttled him into super hyper competitive mode, and he like straight up blew up on the first, like blew up at us on the first hole.
He did twice.
He came out swinging.
Before we even got to the green, John Paul and I said, what is up with Cody?
And it was it was so awkward, and it was just one of those days. You said you were tired and everything, and my failure as a caddy was that we didn't reframe the goal. And I think you double bogeyed the first hole, and I think you birdied the par five. Was that?
I birdied the next hole.
Yeah. You birdied
I
the
went,
next
I went
hole.
Par birdie.
And so, as far as like trying to beat Cody was going, that was over after two holes. There was no catching him after two holes, and it was clear that he was going to be hot that day. My failure is that we didn't take a moment to reset and establish that's not the goal for today. Cody can go yell and be angry. We're not after him. We're just out here to score and to make the best of the round that we can. And so I think my inability to do that with you and my very passive egging on of Cody is, I think I'm primarily to blame for the pretty awkward round last week.
Well,
I think it can go all the way around, but one thing that I think changed as well was the last round, you were more focused on making sure I played a good round.
It's true.
The second time, you were more focused on messing with Cody. You were looking for anything you could stuff in his cart the entire time. Like, I was looking for my ball at one point, and you were off on the other side looking for a pine cone. And I was like, John Paul, you're supposed to be caddying for me, not looking for pine cones.
Which is fine. And hand in the air, that's probably true to a certain extent. You just tell me. Just be like, get your butt over here and caddy for me.
And to be fair as well, like on that first hole, like when I came out hot and kind of we had our little heated exchange. And I totally admit, I very much was in full competitive mode. And I was trying to pull out of it, but I just, every time I would pull out of it, I feel like there was just these little things. I was like, they're conspiring against me.
I'm caddying for him. Of course I'm conspiring. I'm conspiring with him, not against you.
But that's what I mean is like, you should be like, we're on Team Eric. We're doing our own thing. And it felt like you were against me. And that could be me misreading the situation. But after that first hole,
all the crap I was like, putting in your cart didn't.
Yeah. Well, I actually didn't even mind that at all. But what was really funny is that on that first hole, there were no shark repellent. There was no leaves from the vine. It was literally just Eric, Cody, you need to calm down.
Calm down.
I've never
seen
you.
He was so hot.
Yeah, I was like, shark repellent isn't enough. You were just so mad. This is the shark repellent is like on the fifth hole when you've been but this was on the first hole. Like, dude, step back a bit.
Well, it was funny though, because as soon as you said that, I don't know, something clicked and I was like, oh, Eric's not in this.
Yeah.
Like,
it wasn't so much that I wasn't in it. It's that you were just so angry. I was like, this is going to be an unenjoyable round for everyone if he goes through it the entire time like this.
Well, I feel like I lightened up a bit after that, you know, but it was still a bit awkward. There was the awkwardness, residualness was there.
And yeah. I would like to defend myself in that all of the crap that I was putting in your cart the whole time was literally the only motivation I had was actually trying to lighten the mood. And I think it worked for you, Cody. I think it made you feel a little bit better, but it didn't make Eric feel any better. He was very annoyed.
Eric was also pretty exhausted and he was about ready to go on vacation. I think mentally and physically you just weren't in it. Mm-hmm. It was probably just a bad week for all of that to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that night I woke up at 2 with, I randomly get sinus issues. So I woke up at 2 a.m. with just a super runny nose and couldn't go back to sleep. So I hadn't been I'd been awake since 2 in the morning. I had a rough round.
Yeah, and that's okay. And rough rounds happen. And again, like I said, I just feel like I didn't do what I needed to do as caddy. So here's what I've come to the conclusion about when I get the chance to caddy again. This is what I have learned from the experience. What I've learned from the experience, particularly because the next time I caddy, I'll be caddying for Cody. And I just need to make it super clear to both Cody and you that when I'm caddying for Cody, the goal isn't beating Eric.
No.
That is not the goal. There is no element of beating Eric being the goal that day. When I'm caddying for Cody, the goal is to go low because that's what Cody's end of year goals entail.
Or more just make that round the best possible round for the person you're caddying.
Well, and I told John Paul this though. I was like, I want a caddy to push me to go low. Like I'm fine with that. I'm fine treating it like this is a competition and I want to take it seriously.
Some feedback that I have from having the two caddies of John Paul. The first time, and this is for all of us when we caddy, the first time we did it, we'd pick a target and we talk about the club and say like, okay, hit it here. We'd look at the map and the yardage book, and that was hugely beneficial. We didn't do that so much on the second one. And I think that having that yardage book was really good because the second time you kind of, especially like on the par fives, you can't really see where you're going. And I think we need to have that yardage book and talk through each shot. And I'm not saying it was bad the second time, but I think that's an improvement that the first time that we had that for think was really beneficial.
I also feel like the first round, you guys had a plan, and the second round was just kind of like, well, let's just try and do that again instead of what is the plan for today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's ironic that you say that too, because I think we probably did have a plan and the plan went out the window after like the first two holes, and we were unable to regroup. Does that make sense? And we talked about it. Leaves on the vine, all the stuff. We talk about this on the podcast all the time. How do you salvage the round? How do you regroup the round? And I feel like I didn't have the awareness to even recognize that we needed to reset.
Mm.
So I'm going to take a different approach when I caddy, and I'm excited to do it for both of you because I want to kind of have that game plan, but then also backup plans to those backup plans because
mm-hmm.
things change and we should be able to like flip on the fly. And sometimes that conversation might be like, John Paul, when we started this round three holes ago, this was your goal. Like realistically, that's probably not in reach. So instead of just giving up now, how can we shift? What can we still do to make you feel accomplished from what we have here?
Agreed. So Eric, I'm sorry I failed you.
And I'm sorry I got
Cody, mad. I'm sorry I aggravated you.
We're all sorry.
We're all
so
sorry.
You're so sorry.
Everybody's sorry. There's nothing left now but to assign blame.
We all suck at golf. We'll never be better.
What is it?
I'm terrible. I'm never going to get any better.
Well, none of us are good enough to get mad at this game anyway.
Just kidding. So we need to talk about what happened on Thursday. Eric, you were out of town having a wonderful time with your family.
I was actually on the beach saving my son from a wave and losing my phone and wallet.
In the ocean.
Worth it.
Huge bummer. I don't know. He's got a cute kid. He's a cute kid, but a phone and a wallet?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I was fine losing it.
I'm totally kidding. Eric is a fantastic father. Okay, but while you were off, you know, spending time with your family and making meaningful memories, us mere mortals were here. And I went to the doctor on Thursday and was cleared to begin swinging a golf club again at moderate speeds as long as it didn't hurt. And predictably, Cody and I were on a golf course less than 2 hours later.
Okay.
So we decided that we were going to go play, and we did something that we have been thinking about doing for a while. I am trying to take it easy as I ease back in, and I know myself well enough to know that I can force myself into hurting myself if I'm not careful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I thought, what's the most harmless thing that we could do that's still golfing? And so we played a scramble from the red tees. That is one of the most fun things I have ever done in my life.
So for those of our listeners that don't play much golf or haven't played, where are the red tees?
So in golf, you tee off from a tee box. But because there's golfers of different skill level, and some people hit it further, some people hit it shorter, there's multiple tee boxes per hole. And typically, the blacks is what refers to, or the tips, is like the farthest one where the pros play. Then there's typically blue, which is where we normally play from. Then there's white, which is for maybe, you know, where we used to play when we weren't golfing as much.
Where I should probably play.
Where Eric
actually
should probably play.
I don't think so. I think Eric plays just fine from the blues now.
Okay.
But maybe for those that have a little bit harder trouble and are still trying to get their hands on the game. Then there's the red, which, you know, had some other names that are maybe not as, you know, politically correct in today's climate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, call it the senior tees or the ladies tees.
Yeah, but that's completely fair because ladies and seniors generally can't generate the same kind of club head speed, and so it is a disadvantage for them. And so to even out the game, they have tees that are closer to the hole.
Yep, and sometimes courses have even closer tees, which are either yellow or blue, which is like junior tees for like kids.
Yeah, we did not play the junior tees.
That would be fun.
We did play the red, so.
But I mean, it's literally less than half of the hole.
So let me explain to you why this is perfect, Eric, because A, we're scrambling. So I'm not going to try and swing out of my shoes because I don't need to. Cody's got all the firepower that we need so I can focus on the finesse shots. Our course, as we've covered, is a challenging course and it plays well and it's interesting. There's some decision making to be had. There's a lot of risk reward. The red tees put you up just far enough to make it really interesting. It makes a few of the par fours drivable for Cody. It puts the par threes, so they're essentially chip shots from like 100 to 110 yards out. And
yeah, I don't even know where the red tees are on ours.
You can seek flags. So it isn't like you're just aiming for the green. Like you're aiming for a quadrant of the green. And it just, it is so much fun.
So they threw us on the back nine. So yeah. Hole 11, where you have like the ravine off to the left and you're the elevated tee box, my drive ended up pin high, 10 feet off the green. To the left.
So we went out there and we played bogey free and went four under par.
Wow, nice.
So we scrambled for four under, but the whole time we were doing it, we were like, Eric should be here. Eric would be having so much fun with this. He would love this. And so in the spirit and honor of that, on Thursday, let's do it. Let's do the three of us again.
Because you're still not at full power?
I'm not at full power. It's going to be a while. I don't think we play the red. I think I can get to the whites and then the blues pretty quickly here.
By the time that we were done with the round, John Paul said, I'm not in pain, but I can tell I'm going to be sore. Mm. And so we're going to take that definitely easy.
We'll go easy. But because of where the red tees are there, there was no point where I was swinging full. I was just clubbing down and swinging smooth, and most of the shots, especially the approach shots to the green, aren't full swings anyway when you've driven it that close, and so I was not required to do a full swing. And so the pattern that we played is I would take out my driver or my 3-wood or whatever and just bunt one 50% and get it somewhere in play and then let Cody just, as the teenagers would say, we just let him cook, and he would just smash it. And then I felt like our last caddy round was extremely less enjoyable than normal because of the over-competitive nature of it. Mm. This is incredibly under-competitive. It's the exact opposite of what we did, and I think it'll be a refreshing game.
Sounds like fun. Let's do it.
Hey, guys, guess what?
What?
It's time for...
Talk Nerdy to Me.
All right.
It's never going to get old.
Let's talk nerdy to me. So the question for today is... You know, what do you think is the most OP weapon in a video game? Now, I don't know if we need any like qualifiers for this. Like, do you think it has to be a weapon that you as a character get to use? Or just in a video game in general?
And what do you mean most overpowered? Like for that game or like in the expanded universe?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, you know, compared against each other, like... What is the most OP weapon out of all the video games you've ever played?
I have one that I can start with. I've got several that come to mind, so we can bounce this back and forth.
I kind of think it's a little bit of a, you know, let's bring them up and see if we can beat it.
Let's bounce it up. But I'm going to start with one of my favorite video game franchises, which is Ratchet & Clank. The Rhino 5 is so satisfying.
Why is it called the Rhino?
I'm not going to explain the Rhino acronym. if you know, you know. But what makes it awesome is that literally while you're pulling the trigger of that weapon, it plays the is it the William Tell overture? And it shoots in every direction, and there's missiles and lasers and everything. It just... Everything around you is just laid to waste as you're just flipping around in a circle with this magical music.
It sounds kind of akin to the acronym of the BFG from Doom.
Yes. I love the Rhino 5.
Okay.
All the Rhinos are good, but the Rhino 5's peak Rhino.
Yeah, and you can shoot it and vaporize everything in the vicinity in like a second.
Interesting. So I had a different take on this because... I was trying to think, like, as you're using it, it doesn't feel super overpowered, and that's the Master Sword from Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple iterations of the Master Sword.
Mm-hmm.
But why I think it's a potential contender here is because it has the ability to seal the darkness when it's done.
That's
when
fair.
It's done its job, it is holding the darkness back from overpowering the land.
To be fair, it's pretty crappy at that, though, because the darkness does seem to escape from Nintendo on a relatively regular release schedule.
Because of money.
So I'll go with one. Final Fantasy IX, Zidane's ultimate weapon. He's the main protagonist. If you get his ultimate weapon, it unlocks a trance ability where he pulls worlds together and they collide and it does just a massive amount of damage.
Okay. It's one of those Final Fantasy 999999999999 things.
The most powerful sword. You've got Oblivion from Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, no, no, no. Go back one moment because I was about to talk about Kingdom Hearts because Kingdom Hearts 2 could be my favorite video game. It's close.
It's a good one.
If it isn't top, it plays with it. And the best scene for those... And it's not a spoiler alert. If you haven't played Kingdom Hearts 2 by now, come on, get with it.
Go but play it. Pause this. Go play it.
Play it right now. But there is a scene where you are in a chasm with an incredible number of relatively low-powered enemies. And the battle mechanic in Kingdom Hearts allows you to go into forms. And so in one of his forms, Sora, who's the main character, gets a keyblade in each hand, and so you can put Oblivion in one hand and the ultimate weapon in the other hand and be in final form, killing thousands and thousands and thousands, and you're doing enough combined damage that the meter on your final form just keeps reloading. And so you just out of final form, back in. Out of final form, back in. It's very so satisfying. It's one of my favorite.
And you're killing moments. Heartless, by the way. Don't need to worry. It's not people. They don't
it's
have
not people.
Hearts.
They're just heartless. They're just, yeah.
They're smoke.
But I have to tell you, I've played that game all the way through probably three times, and I look forward to that moment. And then once I've finished that moment, I'm like, well, I guess I'll beat the game, but I've done what I came here to do.
There's a game for Xbox. In the game, you can control time. And so one of the weapons is a sniper rifle, and you can send yourself into the future and then shoot someone in the past. So you know that where they're at, and you can snipe, and you can control the bullet's trajectory with time by slowing it down in different directions and shoot someone in the past.
Wow.
And then everybody is like, what just happened? That guy just got sniped by nothing. And it's a pretty overpowered game, overpowered weapon.
I have an adjacent question to go along with this. Do you prefer games where you kind of get to this point to where you have this OP weapon and so you can breeze through the rest of it? Or do you like it where kind of the game keeps your level in check so it's skill-based the entire time?
I like the skill-based, personally.
Do you like Souls games?
I've never played them. I'm not sure.
Mm.
But like the Final Fantasy games, even though you are super... like. When you face the final boss, you always have like a final attack that's going to destroy him. But getting to that final boss, you still have quite a struggle to beat them.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, I think of Final Fantasy VII, by the time you get Knights of the Round, it's just kind of like, okay.
Oh,
like,
Final Fantasy IX is not the same. It's your final battle is still very hard and takes like hours. Yeah. And there's a boss called Oasis. Even max level, he'll destroy you 90% of the time.
Wow.
I absolutely hate when a game gets that balance wrong. So I actually don't care if the game is relatively easy and you're just playing it for fun. And I don't mind it if it's really hard and a constant challenge. What I hate is games that don't get the pacing of that right. So you either have to grind for a million hours to get anywhere in it.
Super Meat Boy.
Or where it's super, super, super easy. And as a result, you don't grind sufficiently, and then you run into a boss that absolutely destroys you. The most egregious example of which is the second Paper Mario game, the Thousand Year Door. That game is a kid's game. It's a really easy turn-based card game thing. It plays super fun, super easy. You're just like, oh, this is wonderful. This is relaxed. You get all the way through. The final boss in that game is nearly impossible. Like, there is almost no shot at beating the final boss. And the whole game leading up to it is incredibly easy. You're totally unprepared for being absolutely handed this final boss. And I hate it when that happens.
So in Super Mario RPG, which is the predecessor to the Paper Mario games, the Super Nintendo, it was much more grindy. Mm-hmm. They fixed it in the Switch release. If you have the chance to play the Switch release, they get it right.
Oh, that's interesting. Good. That's good.
Another thing I will add... this is really rich coming from John Paul, the man that I let borrow Metroid Dread, and he gave it back less than a week later and said, I can't do it.
I hate that game. That game is so hard.
This is also coming from John Paul, who together, he and I stayed up till 3 a.m. just trying to beat one of the chest levels on Rayman Origins. We did that same level for hours until we got the timing just right. That was
so earlier you were talking about Final Fantasy characters going into a trance phase. You and I were in a trance when we finally got
we
that.
We were.
Like, in the zone?
It was insane.
We were
like,
so in the zone.
Like, literally, I don't think I blinked for an hour and a half.
when I left, we both had the X button imprinted on our thumbs.
Wow.
We had to keep stopping and getting a towel to wipe the controller off because it was so sweaty it was slipping out of our hands.
We are due for another retro video game night, gentlemen.
Man, yeah, that game are. Was so... Rayman Origins, people. It's okay, so good.
But yeah, so I tend to like games where they get that balance. That's a good way to put it, John Paul. That balance has to be right. Sometimes it is fun to just get the OP weapon and just obliterate, and sometimes you have to earn it. Like, I remember the first time I found out cheat codes in, like, StarCraft. Mm. Power overwhelming. And it's so exciting. It's like, look what I can do. I'm unstoppable. And that fades really fast.
That's it. Yeah. And that's the super life metaphor. Okay? I'm going to wax philosophical to close this out. The reason why we love golf is because it can't be mastered. Right? One of my favorite games of all time is Super Mario Brothers 3. I love that game. I have beat it many times. I owned it as a very young child. It was the first real solid, good video game that I got into. My brother got a used Game Genie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And there was a cheat code. You could put all of these cheat codes into the Game Genie, and it would allow you to apply cheats to Super Mario 3.
To our younger generation that don't know what a Game Genie is, it's literally a cartridge that sits between your game and the game system.
Yeah, and allows you to put cheat codes in, and you'd get a book with the Game Genie, and it had the description of the code, and you'd put it in and play. And I remember, oh, this is awesome. We're going to play Super Mario 3. And I gave myself, like, unlimited Tanuki suit and unlimited P-Wing and invincibility. So those were my three, which means you just run through the game, destroy everything. You are invincible, and you fly whenever you want. And do you know what? That game is really boring with those cheat codes.
Oh, yeah.
It is a complete waste of time. And it was such an interesting realization that, oh my gosh, if I had instant power, and that's what it is. If I woke up tomorrow and had the golf game of Scottie Scheffler, I don't want it. I want to be better, but I want to earn it. I want to be better, but I want to grind. I want to be the one who's done the grinding. I don't want to be magically granted the overpowered weapon. I don't want a magical driver that always goes straight or a putter that always runs it into the hole. I do want to run the putts in the hole, but I want to do it through hard work, perseverance.
We get surprisingly philosophical on this podcast because I've told you, Eric, this multiple times when, like, that rain round and other times when you've gotten close. I'm like, I want you to beat me, but I want you to earn it. I want you to beat me when I'm playing well. I don't want you to beat me when I've played a bad round because I want that same feeling. I don't want you to ever have a doubt because I know you're going to do it eventually. It's going to happen. I don't want to ever have to be like, well, yeah, I beat you, Cody, but you blew up on that. I want you to be like, you played really well and I still got you because I think it'll be extremely satisfying.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can beat either of you on your best day. Yet.
I don't know about best day, because that's the thing about golf, you know?
What's your best day?
I just need you to slip up a little bit, because when you guys are really on it, I don't know if I could catch you quite yet, but in the future I will.
I don't know if I've ever played a round where I'm burning on all cylinders throughout the entire round.
Mm. If you could pick a video game weapon, what would it be?
To just own?
Own? Yeah,
like just randomly, you wake up tomorrow and it's in your room. What's going to give you the most chills?
Keyblade.
Yeah, I was going to say the Keyblade. Waking up and seeing the real Keyblade next
to you. Especially because it can disappear. And when you need it, you just...
Oh, yeah. If it could do the light circle-y appear in my hand thing, that's hard to beat, man.
It is incredible. They made that mechanic so good.
And you know what? It's the stupidest weapon in any video. It's incredibly so cool. Impractical, but it just...
Well, even the
it works is somehow.
Like,
it works, right?
Yeah.
Today, we are going to talk about some of the most important clubs in the bag and controversial ones. We're going to talk about wedges today.
Wedge Antilles?
Biggs and Wedge.
That would be a fun putter to name. Get your wedge and put Antilles engraving on it.
By the way,
I just want the quote, nice shooting wedge.
There you go.
That'd be good. Nice shooting wedge. Wedges are a really interesting thing in the game. So let's talk about wedges. What are we classifying as a wedge when we're talking about wedges? Because wedge is technically anything below a 9 is a wedge.
When you go to the golf store and say, where are your wedges? You're going to find anything from
like 50
to a 60 plus.
Right. And so I have a 45 degree wedge in my bag, but it's part of my iron set.
Yeah.
And it's just a gap wedge.
Same as mine. Like technically gap wedge, pitching wedge, but they're not like with the wedges. They're usually sold with the set.
So for the purposes of our conversation, we're talking anything 50 and up.
Anything that has a number instead of an initial.
Okay. And super quick recap for the non-golfers in mind. You've got the driver and woods to hit it far. Then you have varying degree of irons to hit your approaches and other shots in between. Wedges are generally used when you're closer and have different shot types that just try and stop it on the green. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's very true.
They have a lot more grooves on them on the face than regular irons so that they can get a lot more spin on them. So that when they land on the green, they can stop
quicker. Now, I'm going to say that I think that this is an important thing in the bag because there's a little bit of probably hubris in the game of golf when it comes to equipment. Guys spend a lot of money on drivers, this guy included. A lot of money on them. But really, when it comes to performance, there is a humongous difference between a cheap wedge and an expensive wedge. Like the level of capability that those wedges have is significant. And so I think possibly, you know, if there are listeners out that are looking to upgrade something in your bag, if you don't have good wedges, go get good wedges.
Who would have bad wedges?
Oh, I also think that it is probably a club that you should strongly consider buying new, or if not new, very, very like new.
And try them.
Yeah. If you can, absolutely.
Because the grooves have got to be sharp for the wedges to do its job, and they wear out. Like a wedge has got a certain number of years, and then it's no longer good anymore.
You're giving me a lot of credit. You think I have worn out grooves on my wedges. I'm not that good.
What about?
No, because mostly it's just the hosel and the very edge of the blade on your wedges that are
struggling. The center is quite good.
The center is in perfect condition.
Wow. What about Vokey? Because I've heard that Vokey wedges, the whole thing, they're supposed to be like,
that's like the
last
gold,
for forever.
Gold standard. And which, oddly enough, I don't have any Vokey wedges. And when I had the chance to buy one, I didn't.
Yeah. So let's talk about what we have in the bag, and then we'll talk about what we would love to have. So there's a lot of guys out there that run three kind of low wedges. I don't. I have a two wedge setup. My wedges are a 52 degree and a 58 degree. I use the 52 degree for bump and runs when I want to keep it low, when I want to run one up. I also use them for approach shots inside 90 yards. The 58 is only for escaping sand or when I have to go high and land it soft. And so when I have to do a flop shot or something of that nature, that's the only reason why the 58 is in the bag. So, my 52 degree is a Callaway's Mac Daddy Jaws, and I highly recommend the Callaway's. They're something that they did with the grooves. If you ever looked really closely at the faces of those Callaway wedges, they have these almost micro grooves on top of the grooves. And I don't know if that's just a mental thing or if it actually affects the golf ball, but I feel so good that I'm going to be able to put spin on the ball, that I'm going to be able to get control on the ball. And I absolutely love it. And I bought the 52 very lightly used and put a new grip on it and absolutely have loved it. And I loved it so much that I convinced my wife to buy me the 58 in the same type of wedge. But I bought that one brand new and paid quite a bit of money for it and regret it not a bit. I absolutely love it. Also on my wedges, I have a laser engraver in my garage and I have customized my wedges. And my 58 degree wedge, because I use it in the sand, has the earth bending symbol of Ba Sing Se.
Nice.
Because I want to channel my my earth bending while I'm in there. And the 52 degree wedge has our own logo, the For the Record logo.
I thought you were going to say the water because you like hit it into the water with
no,
it.
No, no, no. I'm trying to think positive thoughts with my wedges. And I love my wedges. They're fantastic.
I'm going to go next because I think that we're going to talk about Eric's last, his okay. wedge situation. So I had just some crummy wedges. I don't even remember what brand. So I picked up the K-Sigs, the Kirtland Signature wedge set when it came out.
Mm.
And it comes with a 60, a 56, and a 52. And they're okay. They're not great. They're not bad. They're just okay. The price is really good. I kept the 52 and the 56 and the 60 in my bag for a little bit. The 60 left really quick because it would literally just pop straight up in the air for me. When I hit, I have quite a high trajectory mm-hmm. on just about all of my clubs.
Yeah, you have a really shallow swing path. Yeah,
and I just didn't need the 60 very often. So that pulled out. So I was left with the 52 and the 56. And I kept the 56 in my bag, and I replaced the 52 with a Jaws, Callaway Jaws 52.
After he hit mine a few times and I was like, holy crap, it checks up.
I want this.
Does. It does check up.
Yeah. And so I still have the Kirtland Signature 56 that is essentially my sand wedge. I use it to either when I really need to flop something high mm-hmm. or get out of the bunker. Otherwise, I almost exclusively use my 52 and it does great for me.
And I would say that the 52 is more important than the 56 or the 58.
Yeah, I can do the bump and run. I can pop it up a little bit. I can't mm-hmm. do like a flopper, but to be honest, I don't need to very often. So
yeah, I'd say in a wedge situation, I'm 52 80% of the time.
Yeah. But let's talk about Eric's wedges because
what do you got, man?
You're in an interesting situation right now with your wedges.
Yeah, so my wedges, my wife got for me a couple years ago. They're just some Lazarus wedges. And when I first got them, I think they did great. I just don't think they've aged particularly well. I feel like the grooves have worn off pretty quick because I can't get them. My 52 won't stop. It rolls for forever.
It won't check.
The 60, I am fine with. I use that most of the time because it actually checks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've used it to get out of the bunker and got my Clive with it. I don't hate my wedges, but of the clubs that I need to replace, I feel like they are the highest. I've recently played with John Paul's wedges, and I was able to get a lot more control with them.
That was what I was going to bring up. I was curious, after using John Paul's wedges when he couldn't play, and even just in our practice round when, or not our practice round, but before when we were just practicing, like I heard the comments from you, we're just kind of like, oh, wow. Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Like, so because like the 52, I would hit it and be like, okay, I need to hit it here, and it will roll up. With my 52, I hit it, and it just keeps going. It never stops. But with John Paul's, I was able to get it to check where I expected it to. It behaved a lot more like what I thought it should. And I definitely want to replace them, but I'm not going out today to change
that. Not necessarily.
Not immediately. Cody and I have talked about this a little bit, and I've talked about it with you as well, Eric. I'm secretly hoping that you win the
not so secret when you tell everyone
handicap battle because I would love to see you just go buy a 52 degree wedge. I don't think your 60 is bad. I wish you had the 56 instead of the 60. Sadly the 56 is lost to the ethers.
Yeah, I have looked at the Callaway because I've played with them now. I'm pretty convinced that I would get those and be happy. So I've been looking at Callaway pre-owned, but they don't have the 52 very often.
Yeah.
So I've been keeping my eye out. They have 54 and 60s, but
I think it would be an interesting experiment for you to look at a Vokey.
I've been wondering that as well, but those are a lot harder to find. So
they are a lot harder.
You think you want to go used after my whole spiel about
it's okay as long as they're light and you can try it.
As long as they're light. Well, and as long as they're not completely dead. We've seen some like brand new in the used section for a good price.
That's fair.
So. And there are snobs who change their wedges every year, and all power to them. If you got the money to do it, by all means, and we benefit from that.
If you're a listener that does that,
feel free to let us know.
Losing your mind.
Now,
I'm reaping the benefits.
Two things we have to cover really quickly before we move on from wedges. Number one, bounce matters. So when you're looking at a wedge, they have what are called grinds, and they're different for each manufacturer's. I have an S grind on the 52 and a W grind, but those are Callaway markings. The Vokies have different markings and the Pings have different markings. So it depends on the thing, but it's really important when you're looking for the wedge that you understand what grind you're getting so that you know how to play the bounce. And as you're reading up, we play generally here in Utah, it's hard.
Yeah, the greens are hard.
You need a pretty...
it's almost like landing on clay.
You've got to have something with a pretty aggressive bounce. If you use like a standard S grind on, say, a sand wedge down here, you're probably going to dig that sucker into the ground and break your wrists. Like, yep. You need something that bounces.
How many times have we landed short of the green and still rolled off the back?
Oh, yeah, several times.
So many times. And so bounce is really, really important. And that's one of the things that bothers me about the less expensive ones, is that they're all essentially an R grind. And they would be fine if they were an iron, but they're not made for that lovely bouncy action around the green. There's no forgiveness. You get it wrong, you're screwed. My particular wedges, I've got that W grind. That thing's so forgiving. I can miss it by a lot and still be okay because it bounces appropriately. The other thing is that Eric was gone on vacation, and I had his wedges in my garage while he was gone on vacation, and I vandalized his one wedge with my laser engraver without his permission, but I'm still very proud of the act. It's a very deep cut, but I burned a clawfoot bathtub, a moth, and a ladder.
Like a moth in a bath. In a bath.
If you know, you know. A ladder?
Why would a moth think about using a ladder?
I feel trapped like a moth in a bath.
Why wouldn't it?
Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
We're going to switch up the format for the Birdie Bev today a little bit, because our backlog of Birdie Bevs is growing, and we need to get through these.
And it's worth noting that with root beers, we have learned through experience now, freshness is a factor. It makes a difference when the root beers are a little older or a little newer.
The FF. The freshness factor.
It does. And so we're calling today a Birdie Bev Barrage, because we're going to try four different Birdie Bevs and rate them on this, just because we need to get through our backlog.
And we want them to be fresh. We want them to be tasty. And we're going to quick fire four of them.
Yep.
So, all right. Should we list them off one by one, or how do we want to do it?
Just really quick to make sure that we don't screw up kind of going from root beer to root beer to root beer, because I think that can sway. I did some Googling today about, like, how do people cleanse their palates tastings? And apparently, this is really common in, like, wine tastings, is unsalted crackers or, like, a citrusy fruit with some water to kind of wash it down. So I brought some unsalted saltines, which begs a question all on its own. Can you call it a saltine without salt?
That is a really good question. I'm going to say that a saltine without salt is like a day without sunshine.
It's just a wafer cracker.
A world without string is chaos.
Well, I tried one. They're not great, but it will definitely, I think everyone needs to take a cracker to kind of start us off, so you have a fresh kind of neutral flavor palette as we get ready to bust into these bevs.
Are we going to give the cracker a 1 to 10 rating?
I love saltines. This is like a 3. A salted saltine for me is like a 7.
So shout out to my twin. One time he was at someone's party, like a friend's house or something, and he saw a bowl and he thought it was like candy that was shaped like a dog treat, but it was actually dog treats, and he ate one and he says they taste just like super condensed saltines.
Wow. I have to say I love crackers. I love all kinds of crackers. I don't love these.
No. Now you are ready to taste the Bev.
We're going to randomly pick a Bev here. Grab one out of there, Eric.
Okay, close your eyes. A Soda Beers root beer, pure cane sugar, alcohol-free, gluten-free, creamy vanilla, family-owned. This is one that's pretty common. You can get this pretty much anywhere.
Are you sure you can drink that root beer? It's family-owned. The other members of your family could lay claim to.
Are you going
to
be okay with the non-diets, the multiple?
I'm going to take it slow.
The crackers will help.
Yes, they'll absorb
soak in the...
They'll magically absorb the sugars from my blood like insulin. That's totally how diabetes works.
All right, giving it a sniff.
Yeah, I got the sniff test.
Smells good. Smells pretty root beery.
Can I tell you this? The mini steins are a win.
Oh, we need to take a picture.
I need a picture of this right now. That is a great
The foam ratio on this as it pours into these mini steins is perfect. It looks like a commercial. It's magnificent.
All right. Soda beers, root beer, creamy vanilla. What you got? I gave it a 6.
I also gave it a 6.
I gave it a 6.5.
Okay.
So pretty similar.
Maybe I'm thirsty.
Yeah. It's not the best, but it's
I felt like it was unremarkable.
It's smooth, but it's not complex.
Yeah.
It's smooth.
There was nothing that made it stand
out. It's cold. It's smooth. I like it. I don't love it.
Yep.
If it was out, I'd eat it. Or I'd drink it.
Going for a dry cracker. I've had an eye on this root beer for a while because it looks very untraditional for a root beer. This is an Oak Creek Blonde root beer.
Did you say Oat Creek?
Oak Creek.
Oak Creek.
Is it called a blondie?
Oak Creek. Blonde root beer.
It's a blonde.
I wonder if that's a thing. I've never seen them before.
Yeah, and it is, like, the bottle is clear, and the liquid of the root beer is, like, a very, very light, almost like a light cream soda.
Oh, this would better not be another one of those, like, mildly root beer flavored waters.
Oh, no, it is a full sugar made with real brown sugar.
Ooh, cool. How do you make that at a real brown sugar when it's incredibly not brown? Well, it looks even more clear in the glasses.
You know, I was just thinking.
I could fool myself into thinking that's water.
Okay, it is different.
That's a strange.
I don't know if I'd call this a root beer almost. Five.
Three,
really?
Yep.
So.
You guys go first.
I thought flavor-wise it was a 4, but I gave it an extra point for being blonde. Like that little gimmick. Style points.
I thought it was a 5 because I don't know if I could, like, drink a ton of it, but in little sips, I could see nursing that over some time and being okay with it.
I think it has some sweetness. It has some nice floral notes. It's not incredibly complex. Here's my issue with it. I suppose you could say it's gimmicky with a blonde root beer. My problem is that when I taste it, I don't taste root beer.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't. There are certain notes that say root beer to me. If I were blindfolded, I wouldn't call that a root beer. It doesn't taste like root beer to me. And that's a wide, you know, variety of different drinks that are root beery.
Do you feel like
I just don't feel like it's root beery enough
what
for
makes
me.
It, what makes root beer a root beer?
I think there's a, this is going to sound crazy, but have you ever like eaten like sugar? Just like eating some sugar, like a little teaspoon of sugar or something, or just taking a pinch of sugar and eating it.
Yeah, every child in the world has.
Okay, yeah, I would imagine at least every American has done that many times. And have you ever like had like a salted caramel, like a cooked sugar? So
yeah.
I think that there's something, maybe it's all in my head, the sweetness in that feels undercooked. It feels underprocessed to me. There isn't a rich carameliness to it. It's sweet.
It has caramel in it, but yeah, I agree.
It is sweet, but it doesn't have that smoky depth of flavor that I associate with a root beer. It just feels like it's a root beer that needs to be, you know, cooked a little longer.
Okay, that's fair. Do you consider like a sarsaparilla a root beer or like a birch beer a root beer?
I think a sarsaparilla is close, but I don't think I'd call it a root beer. Birch beer, definitely not. And ginger beer's out. That stuff is, I mean, it's tasty, but it is not a root beer. I'm so excited for this one. This one is dang. In fact, it's Diet Dang. It's our only diet soda of the day. It is, I love this label, the original Diet Dang. That's good. Diet root beer. It's gluten-free. It's caffeine-free. It's 12 fluid ounces. It is zero carbs. We're going to give it a shot.
Have either of you had this before?
No. Have you?
No.
Oh. Now remember,
this is diet scale. We don't have very many on the diet scale.
I gave it a 7.5.
I gave it a 9.
I gave it an 8.
Yeah. I almost went higher, and I like, if we weren't trying to keep our scores secret, I would have been like, dang, that's pretty good.
I was looking at you because I was going to see if you were going to do it, and you looked like you were going to say it for a moment, and then you backed up. I was like, oh, he hates it.
No. I had to remind myself that it was diet, which is a good sign.
And it's a good sign.
Yeah.
I'm going to share something very interesting. I was listening to a different podcast earlier this week, and they were talking about a book that they'd read that was talking about nutrition, and that we always think of your taste as something that's very static. That you like certain things, you don't like certain things. Your body replaces your taste buds several times a year, like all of them regenerate. Your tongue is a very damaged thing. The acids in your mouth are very acrid. So your body's constantly replacing your taste buds. And so as a result, if you change your eating habits for a significant period of time, and it takes weeks and weeks and sometimes months and months, you can develop very different flavor preferences. That really resonated with me, because if you'd given me that diet root beer 10 years ago or 15 years ago before I was diabetic, I probably would have spewed it out of my mouth. Wow. Right? This is going to sound crazy. I really like the taste of a diet root beer. I know that's crazy, but I enjoy the taste of a diet root beer. And sometimes cane sugar root beers particularly have a little burn to them that I actually don't like as much anymore. And so the dang diet root beer gets a good rating for me for being a good diet root beer. But I'm going to say if I put it on the non-diet scale, it wouldn't score an 8, but it would score pretty high.
That's why I scored it so high, was I was like, even with non-diet root beers, I might consider drinking this over a non-diet root beer because it was so tasty.
So my mom is similar to you, John Paul, in that regard, because she likes Diet Coke. She doesn't like Original Coke, and she doesn't like Coke Zero. It has to be Diet Coke. And I think it's just because over the years, that's what she's been accustomed to.
I literally can't drink Coke anymore, like regular Coke. It burns.
It burns us.
It's so, yeah, it's very carbonated. It's hard to drink.
What is our last one for the night, Eric?
The last one for the night is the Empire Bottling Works. It's from Bristol, Rhode Island.
Ooh.
Been around since 1930. It is made with 100% cane sugar.
We were just talking about the freshness of root beer. This one's been around since 1930. It's going to be awful.
Oh, no. Looks pretty good. Sealed. You know, a little motor oil, but...
It has very few ingredients on the list.
Ooh, I like that.
I love it. I love
46 grams of sugar.
I love the shape of the bottle. The shape of the bottle does a lot for this root beer.
It's clear. I like that.
Even if not knowing how it tastes, I imagine myself holding this bottle in my hand on a hot day someplace exotic, and it makes me happy.
This has nothing to do with the score. Can I just say, root beer is such a fascinating drink. Every single one of these root beers tastes very different.
For those people who think that we're silly to do this on a weekly or bi-weekly segment, let me tell you, the spectrum of the tastes of root beer is wide.
I gave it a 7.
What'd you get?
I gave it a 10.
Really?
You like that much?
I like it a lot. I like the licorice flavor in it. Like, that is a good one.
That's fascinating.
This is my favorite we've had so far.
I've almost went 8, and it has a bite. It has kind of that Barks-esque bite to it at the beginning. And I don't know if this is a fresh one, but it just tastes just on the edge of like losing that.
Interesting.
I got to tell you, I can see where you're coming from. I'm not going to argue with you. It's good. I gave it a 6. But again, I was just talking about that kind of sharpness that comes off of cane sugar. I get a lot of that sharpness off of this. And so it's not as smooth to me, but it does have complexity. I will give you that. It is a nice, deep, complex flavor. It's kind of the opposite of the blonde root beer. It has the depth. It feels like it's they've taken time to develop a lot of flavor in it. I would drink the dang over that.
Yeah, I'm gonna bump mine to an 8, not because of what Eric said, but because I gave myself another little test, and I was just comparing to the other two between the blonde and the soda beers, and it's an 8 for me. It's not a 9, definitely not a 9, and nowhere near a 10.
Whoa.
I still like the Caldera. That is the best one that we've tried.
We didn't keep the Caldera bottle for that
one. Good.
But
fear
I agree. That is a good one.
That's a good
one. If I went to a party and that's what they had, I'd be like, oh yeah. You'd turn Kool-Aid man.
Get out your red shirt.
I'm not overstating this. I legitimately, just the way the bottle looks, the way that the label looks, it's very, very satisfying with the quality of the root beer that's inside of it. I would be completely content holding that root beer and finishing the whole thing. I shouldn't, of course, being me. Thank you so much for joining us.
You suck at outros.
That was excellent. You've been holding on for that for a while, haven't you?
No, I just thought of it.
Don't make me get out my rhino. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of For the Record. It's been a good time. It's always a good time here around the table. If you have enjoyed this episode of our podcast, please leave us a review, and we would love to hear from you. Contact us on our website, fortherecord.com, F-O-R-E, therecord.com. You can also find us on our socials at Blue Sky, and we would love to hear from you.
For the Record underscore golf will help you find us on Instagram and Blue Sky. And also, as John Paul said, on our website, if you want your own copy of the Boss Battles Guide, we've got it hosted on there.
Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.